104.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Up next, the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, yes, we are brewing backstage before the equinox, which will be Monday, and we say at last, human-dedicated social action is collaborating with Earth rhythms and all of nature. This Sunday's People's Climate March in New York City, but really everywhere in our hearts, we will be bringing in three wonderful women contributors to this event and to our ongoing cultural dedication. But first, a little bit of mythic news and announcements. So this is the Eleusinian Equinox, meaning the Eleusinian mysteries used to take place on the equinox. And we know that what everybody saw with entheogenic assistance was they saw Persephone, queen of nature, emerge as queen, having shed her maiden youth self into kind of... And for bonus points, on Monday, Pluto, underworld intelligence, is stationing, appears to be standing still, so the gang's all here. And at the same time, Venus is disappearing from the sky, the visible sky, descending to the underworld. So roots down, branches up, we're ascending and descending. Pluto reminds us that everything is volatile in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. Now, Pluto often stations in September, but it was also right before the two bombings of the World Trade Towers, going, whoa, okay, again, everything volatile in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. So we are all gathering, really, to be the medicine antidote to that, going, no, welcome, we work with things. I'll be doing a virtual equinox event by phone, web, audio, Skype, really at the moment of the equinox on Monday, September 22nd, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. The equinox will be 7:29 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. You can sign up at Coyote Network News. I'll be reporting back on the guiding meta story, but also the New York action and also what its pertinence to all of us. So, also wonderful climbing poetry. Naima Penniman and Alexa Garcia and I will be on our Magnetizing Metaphor into Matter tour in California, Bioneers, Friday night, October 17th. That's bioneers.org. That'll be Friday night at 9 p.m. Tuesday, October 21st, we will be at Impact Hub Oakland, 7 p.m. Tickets for that event are at www.caseyandpoetry.eventbrite.com, also at coyotenetworknews.com. So, yes, leadership arising in all of our hearts. This gathering in New York City also includes Sam Sutter, the Bristol County DA, who dismissed charges against the two lobster fishermen, Jay O'Hara and Ken Ward, whose lobster boat blocked 40,000 tons of coal shipment in Somerset, Massachusetts. And Sutter said, no, we're not getting, it's one of the greatest, climate change is one of the greatest crises our planet has ever faced, and political leadership is lacking. He held up Bill McKibben's article in Rolling Stone and said he would be in New York City on September 21st. So also, we say Eleusinian Equinox, climate woof by women, that we may come into collaborative balance with the earth. I love Terry Pratchett's character, Granny Weatherwax, when she's told, you can't do that, million to one chances are against you. She said, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10 when your heart is dedicated. We go, oh! And just an ally on Facebook said this witty thing. Remember, when life gives you demons, make demonade. So we are hosting wonderful Ray Abilea, who may be skidding in. She is helping to organize the Climate Ribbon Project, climateribbon.org, and our great ally, Osprey Oriel Lake from the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, and also our ally, Sarah Bacon, Refugees International Center for Climate Displacement, who will all be cahooting with major conversing forces for this event Sunday in New York City, but also ongoing dedication. So welcome, team. Welcome, Oriel.
Oh, so great to be on your show, and great words. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. And welcome, Ray Abilea. You are here.
I'm here. Thanks so much for having me on, Carolyn.
A great pleasure. And welcome, Sarah Bacon. You're here too, yes?
I am. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
This is great. Okay. So, you know, we will interweave. I know that Ray and Osprey Oriel Lake, they're going to be attending wonderful Naomi Klein's book opening. So everybody, so we're rock and roll improvising. Ray, why don't you chime in first about the climate ribbon, because it takes roots to weather the storm, says the Climate Justice Alliance. And since we are, you know, guided to go down and up simultaneously, tell us about the climate ribbon tree.
Yes, well, the Climate Ribbon Tree and art installation at the end of the People's Climate March will be this beautiful spiraling ritual space for marchers to come together and share their hopes and fears around what they stand to lose to climate change, and to make a commitment to each other to continue to take action after the march, so that it turns out, with this kind of trickster energy, the end of the march becomes the beginning of a new movement that's cohesive and dedicated to taking action after Sunday the 21st. And it's a ritual that revolves around a ribbon exchange, and it's inspired by the AIDS quilt and thinking, what is the climate justice's movement equivalent of the AIDS quilt, of a space where we could really grieve and feel what we stand to lose and what is really at stake for us, and in a very personal and meaningful way. So marchers are going to be writing on ribbons what they hope to never lose to climate change, what they love dearly, and then carrying them in this kind of pilgrimage through the streets of Manhattan, through Times Square, to the end of the march, tying them onto this tree structure built by this amazing renowned artist, Swoon, and then picking a stranger's ribbon off of the tree, reading it out loud, having an audience say to them, "We've got your back," affirming their solidarity and support. So we move from the me to the we, and then tying that ribbon on and carrying it forward home with them.
That's so wonderful, and I'm so delighted to cahoot with you, because we go Venus, you know, kinship, intimacy. Venus is strong and coming back, and just for our mythic news, Jupiter in the skies, its image right now is birth of a new spiritual vitality, deeper resonance behind manifest realities. We go, that is very powerful. And Osprey Oriel Lake, just again, beginning as we put everything on our altar of desirable animation, the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, can you guide us into part of your dedication and cahooting at this weekend and then ongoing?
Absolutely, and I love hearing about the ribbon ceremony. That sounds just perfect for this march that's going to be, I hope, the biggest event that any of us see this year around climate change. I think it's very exciting. People from all over the world are coming to march, and specifically the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. We've been networking with our international allies as well as nationally to bring women to the march. We've been focusing a lot on women's leadership and really seeing, without going into a lot of stats, just the fact that women are big stakeholders in bringing climate change solutions. They're the most negatively impacted by climate change and environmental degradation, but they're really central to a lot of the grassroots movements around what to do and what we can do at our local community level. So we're very excited to bring a delegation of women to the march. And then on Monday, which I'm really excited to hear all that you said, Caroline, about Monday, we're holding an event to really honor particularly Indigenous women, frontline community women, telling their stories, what they're doing in their communities, from Alberta to the Amazon, really women living on the front line of oil extraction, and then talking about what we can do. We have a great team member in our organization from 100% Renewable Energy Institute who will be talking about how can we really get to 100% renewables.
And the last thing I'll just put in here is that also we've just released the Women's Climate Action Agenda, which is an 80-page detailed analysis that really gets into how we need to change the system itself. And I think that's one of the exciting things that's happening at the march, is that many people are realizing that all these different movements are really connected around changing the system itself. And that means looking at our economic structures, our legal structures around nature. And we're seeing that this is really an ecosystem of connections to one another. And as we know from nature, the more we connect to one our ecosystem, the stronger the ecosystem becomes. And I think that's very exciting, that system change has become a deep theme for all of us coming to the march.
That is so powerfully great. And yes, I was reading again your Women's Climate Agenda, also co-authored by with a wonderful ally Claire Lengsfelder and other people in my notes somewhere here, but we want to spiral back to some of the specifics, because it is so great, as I was saying to a number of you, you know, we are magnetizing metaphor into matter, that we all have our magic mirror, you know, in which we hold up, you know, the mirror and go, look, this is really serious. Oh my God, you know, and then with the wave of our hand, we turn the mirror into a window going, look how beautiful it could be. And then we, with another wave of the hand, we turn it into a door. Let's go there. And that's a perfect lead-in for our next guest, our ally, Sarah Bacon, from Refugees International Center for Climate Displacement. Welcome, Sarah Bacon. And just feel free to guide us to your participation in the march, what is most dear to your heart, how does this all weave together. So, yes, welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Caroline. Refugees International has the only center dedicated to the study of climate displacement in any humanitarian organization in the world right now. And climate displacement is when people lose their homes and their livelihoods due to climate-driven events, floods, drought, etc. So we're marching because it's not an aspect of climate change that people really think about, yet climate displacement is really the human face of climate change. 1.4 million people lost their homes due to Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines last year. Over 20 million people in the Sahel have been displaced due to ongoing drought, and that's a part of northern Africa. These are people who aren't admitting they're too poor to run machinery or participate in industry that comprises our carbon emissions. However, they are bearing the brunt of the effects of climate change. And that's who we fight for. So I'm really excited to participate in the march. Unfortunately, because the people we work for on behalf of are so far flung, there won't be climate refugees from abroad. And our community is international. We don't work domestically. However, we will be marching hand in hand with the displacement portion of the march, including Hurricane Sandy victims, New Orleans victims, Hurricane Katrina victims, and you know, displacement is when climate change truly uproots our world.
No, well put. And also, because we do have listeners in New York and everywhere, and podcast, and hello, everybody. Because your gathering will be where, when, as part of the march?
Yes, we're part of the march in Tier 1, which are people who are on the front lines of climate change. So the 20 million people who were displaced last year alone are who we represent. Those people displaced globally by climate events.
Yes, but people can join you at what's your address? Where's your gathering?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're meeting at 65th and Central Park West. That's where Refugees International will be. And if you'd like more information on exactly what time and those details, they can be found at refugeesinternational.org. And we'd love for anyone to join us.
Wonderful. Yes, and again, we remember, you know, it's all connected. It's all connected. Our ally, Paul Stamets, you know, has reminded us for years, going, nature responds to human transgression of intrinsic law with viral storms. And, you know, we know even the Ebola virus, you know, deep in the jungle, deep where people should not go without reverence or respect, you know, going there, and you should not go to hunt bushmeat, you should not go to mow down forests, or the viruses emerge like protective Egyptian thought forms around tombs, or even in the carnival aspect of Indiana Jones, going no, with respect. And toing and froing also back to Osprey. And as you both know, we many people are on cell phones here. We are reporting from the field. We are rock and roll, but this is a dedicated democratic show. So to all of you, feel free to chime in and go anywhere you want to go at any point is completely welcome. But Osprey, in looking at the fantastic women's Earth and Climate Action Agenda, how can people find that document, which is so splendid and which we want to have you back on the radio show to go through in great dedicated detail? But can people access that?
Yes, thank you so much for mentioning it. On our website, which is just simply wecaninternational.org, right on our homepage, there's a big green button that says Women's Climate Action Agenda. And it was actually formed over the course of a year. About a year ago, we did a large international summit with women all over the world, with Dr. Vanda Nishida, Dr. Jane Goodall, Mary Robinson, and many, many grassroots and indigenous women leaders from Africa, India, South America. And we all came together to really say, you know, not business as usual, enough is enough. And really pulling from that ancient tradition of women uniting together and how we can really become an unstoppable force when we really collect our voices together. And the seeds of this Women's Climate Action Agenda were planted then. And over the course of the year, several of us really took on doing the authorship of it by getting input from over 100 women leaders, experts in many different fields, to really spill out an action plan that's very progressive. And I think very importantly, you know, in context to the UN Climate Summit, which is why we're all gathering here to really respond to governments and say, hey, people care. We want to be out on the street saying, you know, to our world leaders that we're demanding action on climate change, and we're also demanding ambitious carbon emission cuts, and that this is really serious for us, our children, and future generations, and for our beautiful mother planet. And so the analysis that we did is to really look at, again, the systemic approach in all these different areas, including our economic systems, as well as how we've had a really difficult relationship with nature, to say the least. You know, this whole idea of having nature be property versus really seeing nature as a living, gorgeous being that she is, that we're part and particle of. So we get into a lot of traditional topics about climate change that you might expect from an analysis of this level, everything from oceans and waters to oil extraction. But we also get into the cultural narrative and our change of worldview, because this is so huge. Climate change is really the result of how we've been living with each other in the earth for a very long time. So, you know, to turn our trajectory is going to take a lot of personal inner transformation, as well as at a legal and government level, pretty much in every type of structure and institution that we have. And we think we really need to have these very large conversations, as well as a very up-close local solution conversations, and understand at this point that we really need to collect at the long-term and short-term solutions, as well as collaborate with one another at a very, very different level. And so we really try to approach this at the Women's Climate Action Agenda.
That is so great. And again, pragmatic mysticism. I mean, really dedicated application. I encourage everybody to go to that website and click on the action agenda, because it is so comprehensive and powerful and inspiring. You know, and just part of the lead-in that you were referring to, it says the Women in Climate Action Network envisions a just, equitable world in harmony with nature to achieve the aims of social gender, my printer, economic justice and environmental sustainability, because you're also, partnering with the economics of sustainability, emerging models for a healthy planet, that conference, we had, Georgia Kelly on last week with Gar Alperovitz, October 6th through 9th in San Francisco and Fort Mason. So they're part of your, well, we're all in cahoots, right? Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be a wonderful conference, and I think that's, you know, what people are realizing is we really need to recreate the world that we're wanting to build, and that's a big part of the follow-up afterwards, the momentum afterwards. And I think what's very exciting is many of us who've not met each other are, you know, through this march, able to connect at a level that we haven't. So I'm excited for the march, and I'm also really excited for what will happen in the months to come.
And, yeah, no, it is time for all allies to convene in cahoot, the three of you and all that you represent and all that you're connected to and in our hearts. And Ray, so you were the, Ray Abalea was the former director, is that the right term for, of Code Pink?
That's right, I was the code director.
Say your exalted former title.
I'm the former co-director of Code Pink with fellow creative troublemakers Jody Evans and Medea Benjamin.
Yes, excellent. That's right. And I do get to be a little bit the fairy godmother of Code Pink, because it was in 2001
yes.
That on this radio show, as the fear-mongering Code Red, you know, was coming forth, that, you know, on the Visionary Activist show, we declared Code Hot Pink, meaning, all right, everybody remember, we're all in this thing together. Everybody remember that poignancy is kinship. Everybody remember, you know, compassionate embrace of all things, you know. And I'm thinking of, again, you know, reanimating, because Code Jody and Medea, you know, were meeting at this meeting where we all met, and they were like, oh, we're going to take that as part of our thing, Code Hot Pink, and then they dropped the hot upon advice from PR people. But I think we're all kind of reanimating Code Hot Pink, meaning, right, these calls of sane, reverent common sense. We're all, you know, riding this tide, this rising tide of sane, reverent common sense. And Ray, you know, just to segue with Osprey, because when you then went free range from Code Pink, bless your work there, you went to India and were studying with Vandana Shiva, yes?
That's right, yeah. I went to Navdanya, to her organic farm, and did a course with her and Satish Kumar and some really wonderful teachers looking at issues of GMOs in India, and also the tremendous successes that activists have had there in terms of trying to keep out GMO foods and also fostering native seed library that they have there, which is a perfect example of what you're talking about in terms of the holding up the mirror to the problem of what's wrong and then creating the doorway to walk through and saying, here's how we could live another way, and trying to preserve those more traditional mechanisms of farming.
And as we all share medicine, I mean, Vandana Shiva is so great. You know, when we see her debate incredibly condescending, ill-informed, annoying, you know, interviewers on BBC and mainstream media, and she's very calm and fiercely focused with incredible facts, and we go, oh, this is so fantastic. We do love that, and poignancy is kinship, and that's why I'm so glad also to have you, Sarah Bacon, cahooting here too. That we maintain a sense of kinship, as you say, with because also right now, you know, in California, of course, there, you know, the huge drought is producing these huge fires that everybody is relating to, again, the climate, and, you know, people losing their houses in Weed, California, and also east of Sacramento right now, huge fire, dangerous huge fire, and everyone understands it's because of the drought and that we're heading into more of this. So I think it was you, Ray, who was also saying that, you know, there's huge creativity in Brooklyn on Saturday night. You said the steel workers are also making a float, right?
That's right. I just want to explain something to folks listening in on the radio about this march, that it's unlike anything I've experienced in terms of the overall artistic narrative. As was mentioned, the front lines, communities and indigenous communities marching in the front, those most impacted, and then comes this We Can Build the Future contingent, all the labor unions that have signed on to this call to march, and families and children, and there's a solutionary block and a holding folks accountable who are the corporate bad doers block, and there's a section of debate is over where there's going to be beekeepers and scientists marching with faith leaders, and it's really an amazing narrative story that's being created, and then it ends in this climate ribbon ritual of saying we're all in this together, and to change everything, it's going to take everyone, and we need to come together. And, I think you were mentioning my time in India, and I think it was my time studying with Vandana Shiva when I really came to see the intersection of science and heart, and how in our movement so often we talk about facts and figures and the heads and hands of organizing, and that we really also need the heart and soul. And we know that's how we have had the tremendous successes of the civil rights movement in the U.S., the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And I think it's what we need when it comes to facing climate change as well, is these faces to really emotionally feel through and grieve what we're standing to lose, and express our stories and cultural vibrant fabric and multiple narratives in a collective space.
That's great. I mean, all stories lead us to all stories. I know in talk, everybody's got their touch point, you know, no matter how, whatever. I was talking to a friend who was like, oh, climate change, I don't know, I don't know. And then suddenly she said, maple syrup? We might lose maple syrup? Oh, my God. Okay. So the small, the trivial, yeah. The large, you know. But Sarah Bacon, I mean, you are organizing again. On behalf of those that we must not forget, international climate displacement, we're all in this thing together. And might we say, you know, part of the bitter irony is that the people being most displaced are people, in a sense, most innocent of abuse of planet, and most intrinsically kind of living appropriately, you know, in land for generations in the indigenous way. I mean, does that make sense to you, Sarah?
Yes, Caroline, that's an excellent point. Alice Thomas, who runs the Center for Climate Displacement at Refugees International, spends a lot of time in the field on missions in Pakistan, in Colombia, in the Philippines, in the Sahel, all places that have suffered extreme climate-driven displacement crises. And when she was in the Sahel on her last trip there in the summer of 2013, she was speaking with farmers who, 80% of which in the Sahel area, rely on rainfall. And they said the rains aren't like they used to be. She said, why do you think that is? And they said, God is punishing us. And there is a real, an incredibly tragic disconnect between the perpetrators and the victims, who are literally losing their lands, having to eat their dairy cows, and getting into these negative cycles where, you know, they're diminishing any possible resource for livelihood. And they said to Alice, you can help us. You can tell our story. You know, your country can help us. And so it's their voice that we bring back to Capitol Hill, to Geneva, where the UN is. We write analyses, reports, field reports after every mission with a number of recommendations, and then testify in front of Congress and give them our solutions. And often our recommendations, whether it's allocating more aid to helping families relocate to more sustainable, resilient regions, a whole host of recommendations. But these stories literally get back to the people who make the policy decisions in international sort of policy circles.
And all crucial points. And also, let's remember that part of the conflagration in Syria is catalyzed, the conflagration is by the earth conflagration as well. Long drought, massive massive unemployment, massive shortages of everything. Again, the hot reactivity of the world, you know, what happens when people are deprived. We go, no, it's all connected. And it is poignant, you know, we say, you know, magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. And, you know, to our progressive team, they go, oh, well, Elizabeth Warren, good, but just terrible on Israel. And this, you know, Bernie Sanders, good, but terrible on, you know, Israel and Palestine. We go, yes, yes, it's all complex. It's all complex. So in Syria, it was Bashar al-Assad's wife who was actually starting the environmental program that was much beloved, and that's gone. You know, when we go, okay, al-Assad, bad dictator, wife, you know, good, good. We discourage the bad and encourage the good. We're going to take a very short break with Robbie Robertson, brief, wonderful musical interlude, and I know all you women are busy and dedicated, but I hope you can hang in 30 seconds to come back in after the break. Is that good with you, Ray, and is that good with you, Osprey?
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to take a very short break right now, and we'll be right back after this wonderful Robbie Robertson moment.
This was the way of it. Let the story fires be lighted. Let our circle be strong and full of medicine. Hear me. This is my dream song that I'm singing for you. This is my power song that is taking me to the edge. This is rock medicine. The talking tree. The singing water. Listen. I am dancing underneath you.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Again, go to coyotenetworknews.com for upcoming California gigs and events and ways to participate and ways to connect with all of our splendid guests today, and also where our radio archives are, where you can re-listen to them. So we have today you know, our Eleusinian equinox. Again, 1,000,000-to-1 chances crop up 9 times out of 10 when your heart is dedicated, says fictional character Granny Weatherwax, and we have wonderful, dedicated women here. We have our ally, Ray Abilea of the Climate Ribbon Project, theclimateribbon.org, Osprey Oriel Lake, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, with just a fantastic working agenda going comprehensive, to hand out really to everyone going, here you go, and here you go. And again, that is at wecaninternational.org, and our ally, Sarah Bacon from Refuge International Center for Climate Displacement. And remind me, Sarah, what is the website whereby people can connect more with your dedicated work?
Sure. It's refugeesinternational.org.
Excellent. So Osprey, also, you know, from your great thing, the transition to a green energy economy based on 100% renewables, here's how we do it: democratizing ownership of this new energy economy, protecting the rights of nature. Yes, how we tell the story that we don't refer to nature as resource, actually, but as guiding intelligence. And I love the comprehensive quality and about water, about work, about everything. And I love what you were saying also, Ray, about just the power of this particular march and the unfolding events. So, Osprey, maybe you can guide us in. I know the Women's Climate Action Agenda release, there's much that you're participating in on September 21st, but also, you know, there's a really impressive you know, unfolding there's the Women's Climate Action Agenda. Yes, the lead authors are you, Osprey Oriel Lake, and Claire Greensfelder. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And Elaine Colligan is the other person. Again, I encourage everybody. But do you want to guide us through what some of your upcoming events? And again, we weave that into our altar dedication. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we have. I also wanted to say before I get into that, for listeners to know that, you know, we want everyone to come out and march with us. Hopefully this will inspire some more people to come out and march. And if you can't be in New York for the People's Climate March, you can go to the website, which is simply People's Climate March, and learn about how to do activities and actions in your own local area, because people are going to be doing demonstrations and marches all over the world. So there are solidarity actions that people can do. And we're also actually having a solidarity action within our network, which is called A Wall of Women, where women are standing in a line and they're putting their hand on their heart And they're saying, you know, we're standing up for the web of life. We're standing up for future generations and making a statement. And they can take a photograph of themselves and put that on our website. And all the information is there at wecaninternational.org, and show solidarity with women around the world who are the most negatively impacted by climate change and environmental degradation, but also really central to solutions, and just also connecting to the fact that a lot of the climate refugees are primarily women. The highest percentage are women. And so we really think it's important to understand women's role in the climate movement and also the gender perspective.
And just, I mean, I believe you, and I know you're right, but women around the world are the most impacted because?
They are because, one, they're caring for their families. They are the ones who do 60 to 80% of all food produced in developing countries. All household food, 60 to 80%, is done by women. Most of the water collection is done by women. So as soon as we start seeing these impacts of climate change, women who have to tend to their homes, care for their children, tend to getting the food and the water, begin to have a very, very difficult time. We're also seeing that women are home with the children, so when disasters hit, they are the ones that tend to get caught up in them and have less opportunity to transport themselves out of disaster zones. So these are some of the reasons that we're seeing that women are being hit the hardest, especially because of caring for their families and their children. And the other issue is also sometimes having to do with cultural issues and women not having access to transportation. Also women not being part of decision-making circles. And so a lot of the funding that goes into protecting families or protecting homes or protecting infrastructure doesn't go to women. So there's a variety of reasons, unfortunately, that women are at the bottom of the totem pole there when it comes to the funding also that comes in through programs around climate mitigation and climate adaptation. So it's one of the reasons that we're really focused on women is that we're really seeing that they're the ones that are bearing the brunt. Even when we look at frontline communities, we know that women are the ones still being the ones most negatively impacted. And the event that we're going to be presenting on Monday, we're very excited about because we're actually going to be having frontline women telling their own stories of what's happening in their communities, both from the tar sands up in Alberta, Canada, with Crystal Lehman, and with Patricia Gualinga, who's coming from Ecuador, who is fighting to protect the Amazon rainforest in her community in Sariaco, and the huge work that's going on with women. They're mobilizing to protect their communities. And then we have a woman named Dr. Fatima Diop, who's coming from Senegal, who's working to her organization is called UnDesert, and really working with certification and how to do tree planting and to restore the land through tree planting. And we'll also have Nobel laureate Jody Williams coming to give an overview of her experience with peace and the interface between peace and climate change, as you were referring to earlier. And then Angelina Gallavetta, who's going to be talking about how we can really make this transition to 100% renewable energy, because, you know, there's just so much myth about the fact that we can't get it done, and we hear so much pushback from the fossil fuel industry that it's really important to hear the nuts and bolts about what it means to transition to 100% renewable. How do we do it? What are the issues? And what are the policies and kinds of advocacy we need to really push that agenda through? I think it's going to be a really wonderful event. It will run from 1 to 3 at the UN Church Center, which is right across the street from the United Nations. And so we hope some of our energy will ripple across the street and influence policymakers for our meeting and heads of state. And then we have an event the next day focused on rights of nature. And in a nutshell, we're really looking at, you know, how do we change our relationship to the natural world? Because right now, when we are looking at legal framework concerning nature, it really, unfortunately, follows a lot of our governance structures, which is a very dominant perspective of, you know, humans having control over nature, seeing nature as property instead of its own, having its own rights, rivers and mountains and forests and our waterways, being rights bearing in their own way so that they, so that the land is protected and we view the land in a good, respectful way. And so rights of nature really
changes that paradigm and says that no, humans do not have a right to have dominion over nature. We need to live in harmony with Mother Earth. And how do we change our legal framework to really honor nature that we are part and particle of? So we're going to have a deep discussion about really what does it mean for communities to adopt rights of nature into local ordinances, how it can protect them from things and harms that come into their communities like fracking, and how do we really stand up for our ecosystems and legally have a way to do so. So we'll be discussing that at 2 o'clock at the Church Center as well. And just to do a shout-out to the Climate Justice Alliance and a lot of other groups that are putting on so many incredible events over the next few days that people can look on the People Climate March website to see, I mean, literally hundreds of events going on with amazing leaders from all over the world discussing very important issues. So besides the march, this is like a giant teach-in that's going to be going on here all week. And so I really encourage people to look at, you know, not just our event, but just a host of events that are very, very interesting and can get into a lot of this detailed analysis of what we need to do to change the system that we're living in. And I think people have an incredible opportunity to network as well as get really educated.
Absolutely. I will be there mixing it up with all of you. And I love also the rights of rivers to have their curves. Some of our great permaculture and indigenous guests and allies have said, you know, when rivers curve, they can cleanse themselves of pollution. In straight lines, they carry pollution. We go, yes, the right of rivers to have their curves and all that that means literally and symbolically. And, you know, and Ray, again, theclimateribbon.org is all part of this. And, you know, I like to, you know, put forth, you know, all war is a failure of imagination and all peace is a triumph of imagination. And again, I love the Ribbon Project as the culmination of this march and then as culminating beginning, as you said. But I found it so rousing and inclusive as you were animating, you know, the march with the steelworkers and the whatever. Can you do that again? Going the march led by indigenous people, and then behind that, and then there's Sarah Bacon and Refugees International as well, and the steelworkers. Can you just kind of, you know, and there's Osprey Oriole Lake and her team, and let's imagine all those who are there and all those who aren't. You know, that everybody, you know, pouring in, you know, on their little wind sails, and they're literally or telepathically going, and here's this person with this solution, and here's again inner city programs to say if you come up with a solution to a problem in your neighborhood, you get a full scholarship for the rest of your life to any college you want to go to. And I mean, Ray, do you want to help us kind of again animate or reanimate that sense of march as it will literally be, and then also as it is imaginatively including everybody and all of our dynamic listeners?
Yeah, I want to say, Caroline, that is so wildly inspiring and exciting to be here in Brooklyn at this art-filled space and see people building giant inflatable life rafts and larger-than-life bird nests and huge silkscreen banners. There's a 300-foot banner that's going to be promoting the Creative Direct Action Flood Wall Street that will happen on Monday, the day after the march. So much artistic creativity coming together in this march. And if folks want to go to peoplesclimate.org, you can see a map of the whole march narrative, really telling the story of how to change everything. We need everyone, moving from the start of the march, the front lines of folks dealing with the crisis of climate change now, folks on the forefront of change in indigenous communities, to those who are saying we can build the future, the unions, the families, the kids, the folks that say we have the solutions, talking about renewable energy, talking about food and water justice. It's a great book coming out actually called Beautiful Solutions that's going to be documenting all these ways that people are creating the alternative now, that doorway that you've been talking about. Then there's the contingent, of course, that's saying we know who's responsible and calling out the corporations and the warmongers who are holding back the progress. And finally, the people who are saying the debate is over, the facts are in, climate change is real. And that's the scientists and the faith leaders and the beekeepers all marching together. And like you said, people, you know, that can't come to the march can also be part of this inclusive framework. And one way to do that is to submit a climate ribbon. And we've got this whole team of volunteers in Brooklyn at this art space that are transcribing people's ribbon messages that they're sending into us online. So folks can go to theclimateribbon.org/make, and you can submit your ribbon message of what you love and hope to never lose to climate change right then and there, and we will write it on a ribbon and put it onto the Tree of Life at the end of the ritual, at the end of the march for you.
And that's great, and that's, again, telepathic global, that everybody can be making their ribbon and hanging it where they are, as well as sending it in by email.
Yeah,
make
a tree where you are.
Make a prayer tree. And also, when you said, and we'll have fantastic inflated things, I just go as a sidebar going, oh, not too much plastic, we hope. Is there not too much plastic going on in Brooklyn, or is
that? Yeah, actually, all of the floats that are in the march are, I think, required to be on biodiesel trucks, and there's tons of renewable supplies and recycled materials being used in all of these art builds that are happening.
That is great. Again, so feeling the curvy river of the march, again, serpentine, that it be in cahoots with nature, and this is all very exciting. And Ariel, again, protecting the rights of nature in your splendid, co-authored, agenda too, ending the commodification ownership and exploitation. I guess you're at Cooper Union where it's busy, right? People are gathering for Naomi Klein. Is that where you are?
Yes, I'm sorry. Is this getting too noisy? Sorry.
No need for apology. We're happy to have you reporting from the field, and again, you'll be soon in sharing air with Ray Abalea, who's also going to that event. So whenever do stay. I think the noise is all part of what we're cahooting. That's perfectly fine.
Well, I'll let you know. It's an incredible crowd here. All kinds of people gathered, very excited. A lot of wonderful conversations going on in the hall. And I'm sure it's completely sold out with Naomi's new book, This Changes Everything, which is such a great statement.
Yes, and again, you know, like Vandana Shiva, Naomi Klein, and really all of you, Sarah Bacon and Osprey Oriel Lake and Ray Abalea, you know, just blazingly lucid women, you know, so grateful that we're all part of one, you know, kind of a collective heart brain team, and Naomi Klein is you know, blazing in lucidity. It was interesting because when I had hosted Joanna Macy on the radio, I said, you know, what do you say to climate change deniers? And she goes, I live in California. I don't meet any of those people. And I go, well, okay. But our friend Bob Goff, working with renewable energies on Native American reservations, he says when he runs into people going, it's just a hoax, he goes, notice any unusual weather? You know, he said he's never met any unusual weather deniers. And so we're happy to shape shift our message to, you know, whatever comes our way to, you know, spiral into a, you know, sane, reverent, common sense kind of dynamic. And again, grateful to everybody's contribution in that way. Osprey, before we deconvene, are there fervent wishes, blessings, dedications that you would like to spiral out to our team?
Oh, thank you for that. Well, one of the chants that we've been working on is we can act now and we must act now. And I think that one of the things to just keep bringing it around to is that we are in an urgent situation and there is a small window of time to make a difference on climate change. And with all the festivities, which we so need to lift our hearts and our spirits and to act, I think it's also really, really important to remember the climate refugees, to remember frontline communities and what they're experiencing right now all over the world, and to remember that the clock is ticking. And so it's an interesting thing to really lift our hearts and our spirits high, but at the same time, hold our grief and our concern and understand that, you know, we're going to experience hardships. I think it's foolish not to recognize some of the damage we've already done, but to understand if we act now, we can really lessen the damage that we do, and that can make a huge difference. So I'm really encouraging people to get engaged and understand that there's a place at this table for everyone, because we really do need everyone, and time is short on climate change. So just a shout out to remembering that if we all participate, we can really do the changes that we need to in the time that we need to.
Splendid. You know, and it's also, I mean, so much is converging, you know, Findhorn community in the north of Scotland, and Scotland's voting today. Who knows? But I love the young people in the Scottish videos who are saying, yes, we want to, you know, and I actually grew up speaking a brogue. Look at the wee squiddle. But they were saying, we want a smaller company country because we are then more available to experimentation with worker ownership models and with welcoming refugees from Palestine, and we're not tied to England's colonial domination anymore, and, you know, and we want to do, you know, a completely green country, and we go, you know, who knows, but that's the dedication in there. But the Findhorn is also having its international, you know, storytelling, you know, for now dynamic also on Monday and Tuesday. And when I was there the summer that Nixon was impeached, there was this guy, Donald First, from the World Federalists, who had an office at the UN, and he said, and remember at the UN, it's not just what it looks like. There's the Dag Hammarskjöld Meditation Room, where people unite to conspire for goodness, and spirits of the North Atlantic, then, and, you know, animistic fairies are invited in. I'm like, really? This guy in a suit is talking like that. So anyway, so there at the UN, we go, you never know. Things are not just what they look like, you know, and the great efficacy of so many people, again, to influence and invite and magnetize sane reverence at the UN gathering, which you're doing, Osprey, Oriel Lake, and everyone as well, and Ray. So we love all that cahooting. And Ray, again, this idea of art, Venus, strong, that it's not just this, art is not this frou-frou, again, opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic. We need beauty and life, or we're anesthetized and can't have a solution. So I love also what you're honoring and your own journey and how you're catalyzing the Climate Ribbon Project, which everyone can participate in, going, right, let art, beauty, women move into leadership dynamic. It is really, you know, time for that. So are you feeling roused, encouraged? Do you want to spiral blessing and encouraging out also to our dynamic listening audience?
I've been so inspired to work with this team of artivists on creating the Climate Ribbon and all great. Of the wild magic that's coming out of it, and the folks from all different faith traditions that are conspiring to come together and pull this off at the end of the march this weekend. And hopefully it will live on beyond, and people can start making climate trees in their own communities, like you mentioned, Caroline. And, you know, part of the closing affirmation in our ritual on Sunday, we want to say that these ribbons that we're making can be our roots to help us weather the storm ahead, that we can be rooted to earth and also to each other, and that we can care for each other and be the protectors and the champions of each other's hopes and dreams. And I just really am feeling that energy really strongly, and hearing Oriel and Sarah, both of you, talk about the work that you're doing and bringing women together, leaders together in New York and beyond. It's incredibly inspiring, and the work that we need to all be doing.
May we all flow together. And then before I reluctantly release, beautiful Ray Abalea and also Osprey Oriel Lake to go find their seats at the Naomi Klein, you know, and Sarah, can you hang with us just for a few more minutes after they go?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. I just wanted to bring in, just also as a great blessing from the Hummingbird's Daughter, wonderful novel about Teresita, actual medicine woman in Mexico, and her Aztec granny is teaching her and says, feel your feet and roots growing out of them down into the earth, down into the earth. Feel it now. And Teresita says, does this mean I can't be hurt, grandmother? And she says, no, child, we all get hurt. It means you can't be overpowered. So, you know, to the beautiful work of Osprey Oriel Lake and to Ray Abalea, and again, Sarah's going to hang with us for a little bit, and to all of us, too, putting our roots down. Sure, we get hurt, but we can't be overpowered. So thank you so much, Osprey Oriel Lake.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Absolutely, and we will do full hour with yourself and the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. And also thank you very much, Ray Abalea. I hope you can go find a seat at the Naomi Klein event.
Will do. Thanks so much for having me on, and I hope everyone listening in will be at your Solidarity event or here in New York this weekend.
That's great. Okay, go find your seats at the Naomi Klein event, and we will be telepathically with you. And so here we are again, Sarah Bacon, how wonderful. Part of the kind of mythic dynamic of now that you're holding and animating, just a little more mythos. The image for Saturn right now is woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. And part of the kind of mythological symbolism, it says that which has been invisible, exiled, undervalued is where a culture's soul lives. So it's like humans, you know, don't be distracted by celebrity entertainment, visible hoo-ha. Look at what's missing, what hasn't had a voice. That's where the real treasure lies. And that's really your dedication, and Sarah, right? I mean, it is where soulfulness lives, but which we haven't been paying attention to until now. Does that make sense to you?
It does, Caroline, and that's a beautiful image that you portray. One of the really important points about climate displacement is that the people who are victims to it are the most vulnerable in the world and in societies. They're already living on the fringes. They have very fragile economic circumstances. And so when a climate shock comes along, such as a flood to which you lose your home, as with Typhoon Haiyan or the 2010 floods in Pakistan, which displaced one-fifth of the country, these people have literally nothing left. So when they are displaced, they often want to stay there in those communities because there's nowhere to go back to. Or if they, on the other hand, they want to go back because that's all they've ever had. So if they had ancestral property that was handed down to them, you know, for five generations, and this happened in New Orleans as well, they're going back, goddammit, you know, and no one can stop them. And what that often means is people are going back to areas that are not safe and resilient. So there are these cycles that we need to break, and we need to get host governments to understand that this is going to happen again and again as these climate shocks increase in both their fortitude and frequency, and we need to deal with the kind of fundamental problems, which are: why are these people living on the fringes in the first place? Let's get them out to an area with structures and habitats that are secure and safe, and land that is less prone to droughts. You know, these are hugely complex issues, as you've touched upon several times this hour. But really the most important point is it is a moral obligation of all of us to understand that here we are driving our, you know, hopefully clean diesel hybrid electric cars and still very much scratching at the surface, and in the U.S. with only really the private sector taking an interest in sustainability, and aside from the EPA regulatory potential, there's no sufficient climate legislation. And yet what we're doing every day is literally causing upheaval around the world. I mean, between 2008 and 2013, 140 million people were displaced due to climate-driven events. And these numbers are really hard to wrap your head around, but they're real, and they're families with young children who are being displaced, people just like us. Often the term refugee, which really is only when people are forced to cross borders into another country, is an abstract concept for Americans, unless we're talking about Mexico and the immigration crisis, which I hope we find some sense around soon. But other than that, it really is an abstract concept for most Americans. But the fact is that these are people and families.
No, and we're on our way out right now, but let us continue in perpetuity this important conversation, Sarah Bacon, again, refugeesinternational.org, that we live in a world of refugees. Again, it's due to human rudeness and imposition. It's not just humans, it's animals and critters and everybody. But thank you very much, Sarah Bacon.
Thank you, Caroline. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope that people will look into this issue at refugeesinternational.org, and I hope they'll follow the People's Climate March.
We will, and I'll see you in New York. That's wonderful. Remember, also, I'm Caroline Casey. I will be doing a virtual Equinox online, phone, web, or audio. That will be Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Sign up or sign up for that at coyotenetworknews.com. Thanks so much to BoardOp in Washington, D.C., Alex Drewinskas, and also to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com for all upcoming events and cahooting, and we will all be in telepathic cahoots this powerful time. Thank you, team.
Welcome the Buffalo Field Campaign Roadshow to the Bay Area on Friday, September 26th, 7 p.m. at the Ecology Center, 2530 San Pablo Avenue, between Dwight Way and Parker in West Berkeley. The show features storytelling and video from the land of the buffalo with campaign co-founder Mike Meese and the amazing native music of Good Shield Aguilar and Mignon Gelly. The campaign works to end the slaughter of the last wild buffalo. This is a benefit for the Buffalo Field Campaign, and it is wheelchair accessible. For more info, phone 510-548-3113 or visit our website at buffalofieldcampaign.org.